Hi, everybody. This is Work in Progress. I'm Jennifer Vandepoel, educator of school and family programs at the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria. Call me Jen. This episode is being recorded and will be produced on the traditional lands of the Lekwungen speaking people, also known as Esquimalt and Songhees Nations. In this episode, we are joined by collaborators from our school workshops program, a collaboration with the University of Victoria's Indigenous Education Program. The school workshops are for grades 4 to 12 in school districts across Victoria, Souk and Saanich, British Columbia, and are typically offered each fall from September through November. The 2021 workshops were inspired by Dylan Thomas's artworks in our latest teacher resource guide, free to download on our website. Our hope is that this episode will help extend the learning beyond schools by sharing these ideas more broadly, perhaps with family, friends, and communities who might be curious to learn more. Every year, an artist call goes out in August-ish, and a new locally based artist is invited to join us in engaging school-age learners with ideas and practices connected to art and creativity, all rooted in Indigenous perspectives. Our feature artist this year was Alex Chen. Alex, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. Oh, I am doing wonderfully, always lovely, even though the audience will not see. I can see your face on a beautiful Zoom screen, which has been a sight that has been missed over the holidays because in the fall, we were seeing each other very frequently in a wonderful way.
I've missed you too. Yeah, we were seeing each other really regularly, visiting schools all over the place, very early in the morning.
Very early in the morning. Usually the call would crawl would somehow make it into the transit time as well.
People might be listening from, you know, New Zealand. I wonder what they'll think the call would crawl is.
Oh, very true. So the call would crawl is a morning slow traffic event where everyone from the communities outside of Victoria, for example, Langford, View Royal, Souk, perhaps, are all heading into the city to work. And so it really clogs things up comparatively. If you were comparing it to, for example, traffic in even bigger places like Toronto, it's child's play. But still, there's just the one main artery into the city, so.
Well, I'm so grateful you made it through that traffic and to the schools because I feel like it was a really wonderful experience. And I noticed that you were really positive and smiling every single time I saw you those early mornings at the schools. And I'm remembering, Alex, at the start of every workshop, you introduced yourself to young learners. And I wonder if you can start by sharing that with us.
Yeah, for sure. So we always like to start the workshops in a good way. And so I would often like to trace my family background. Both sides of my family are originally from the Shanghai area, or if pronounced in Mandarin, it's Shanghai, which means on the sea. And both sides of the family, through happenstance very early in my parents' lives, ended up in Beijing. And so they're effectively Beijingers, but family ties to Shanghai. After doing various schooling, growing up, maybe a cultural revolution thrown in there, my family left China and came to Southern Ontario, where my dad did his PhD at McMaster. And then eventually my family settled in Cambridge, Ontario, which is on the Haldimand Tract, which is on the traditional territories of the Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabe, and Neutral peoples. But yes, had the great, great fortune of growing up there, did some schooling in Southern Ontario, a Bachelor of Zoology at the University of Guelph, followed by a Master's in Music at the University of Western Ontario. And then by happenstance, found myself on the unceded traditional territories of the Lekwungen-speaking peoples, now known as the Songhees and Esquimalt Nations. And so I have the immense privilege to work, play, learn, and make art on these lands. Keeping in mind also some of our workshops were on the traditional unceded territories of the Wissanich peoples as well.
Thank you. I noticed a lot of eyes in the room light up when you introduced yourself, and people getting excited to hear more about you and what you do in your art practice. I noticed that in our opening circle, you invited young learners to share whether they make music or whether they consider themselves sound artists, etc. And then you shared some of what you do so they could hear some of it. I wonder if you would do that now with
us. Yeah, for sure. So with music, if I'm playing on the piano, for example, as I'm also a collaborative pianist, I enjoy creating worlds with sound that don't necessarily have words, that let us kind of imagine and wander in our sonic worlds. But with opera singing in particular, I have the opportunity to use the human voice to color words and stories with a whole rainbow palette of colors. And just because it's a good tune, I'd often throw in a little bit of Mozart. It sounds like so. Non ti andrai farfallone amoroso, notte giorno d'intorno girando, delle belle turbando il riposo, narcisetta dolcino d'amor. Delle belle turbando il riposo, narcisetta dolcino d'amor.
Oh, thank you. And then the listeners can imagine a whole bunch of applause, because usually the whole circle of folks would clap after they heard that and their mouths would be open.
Yeah, I admit I was kind of like, I'll just show them a little bit of singing. They'll probably be like, oh, he was pretty loud. But like pretty consistently, there was just like the very first time we did a workshop and there was just like an outburst of clapping. I was like, oh, yes, exciting. Fantastic. And I distinctly remember at one school, as soon as like sound came out of my mouth, there was one girl who was staring straight at me and her eyes just like shot wide open like an owl and just like stayed that way for most of the singing. And I was like, yes, you know, when people say opera isn't for young folks, clearly they haven't seen these folks.
Oh, so many memories I'm having right now. Yes. That makes me think of, I noticed some learners and teachers were surprised that the art, I'm making air quotes, we were exploring with you was sound, humming, sort of singing based with our masks on, of course. And I think maybe that's because some people assume art galleries always or only do things that are tactile, like painting, drawing, sculpture. Of course, not everybody thinks this way, but a bunch of people. So I'm curious to hear what you think about that. Why you think it was important that we made sure to share maybe a bit of an unexpected art form in these workshops.
Definitely. There were several questions, as you said, from teachers and students that kind of went like, so when are we gonna like pull out the pencil crayons or the paints and the shapes and like, you know, make some art? And for me personally, I like to think about art on a broader scale, in that I often think that the purpose of art is to communicate creatively and to ask questions and create a discourse. Sometimes that discourse can be largely to enjoy something, because enjoyment and just the sheer pleasure of seeing something delightful is in itself excellent. But with that in mind, that's not limited to the tactile media, such as, you know, pencil crayons, sculpture, visual arts per se. And so I think that, especially with the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria being quite innovative in its programming, that it's important to ask, okay, what are some of the purposes of art, and what is included within that definition if we're going through that kind of concept. Because, you know, it's easy to be like, ah, yes, art gallery, visual arts, it's a painting, it's a sculpture, it's a static thing. But if you pay a visit to the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria, perhaps, you might notice that there are a good many exhibits that do include a sound element, because it can be full of opportunities for communication, opportunities to find meaning. And so I think that in concentrating on sound as an element in these workshops, we really struck home that sound does have its own meaning, it does create its own art, and it contributes to artistic practice on a wider scale.
Thank you, Alex. The workshops wrapped up like a couple months ago. I wonder what's still resonating for you from that experience.
From the workshops, I found that one point that really struck home and really resonated with me was the importance of holding space for the voices of young learners, because they have so many surprises in so many excellent, wonderful ways. You know, as adults, oftentimes we can look at art and our thought is, okay, what was the artist intending? What were we supposed to get out of this deck? Which isn't really quite how art often works. But nonetheless, you know, we oftentimes in the busy lives of adulthood, it's kind of like we want the right answer, we want it quick, and then we move on. But holding room for the voices of young learners when they're in an environment where the point is for them to maybe, quote unquote, get the right answer, but also just to explore, by holding that space open, it really gives us the opportunity to hear their creative observations that we don't want to shut down in any way, shape, or form. Like, we want to hear it, and we love to hear it. I would say the holding of space was one of the things that really resonated with me. There were a lot of great moments where, you know, we hear certain things repeated from certain schools where it's like, oh, looking at the visual arts of Dylan Thomas or reflecting on the sound and movement mandalas that we made, they might go, ah, yeah, I thought about that and thought about that. And there would be some common themes that we'd see across certain schools. And then pretty consistently, there would be someone saying, oh, I see this in the artwork. And we'd go, we never thought of that. And it's a fantastic, fantastic observation. You know, and those would range on a really, really big scale. For example, one consistent observation that a lot of people made that I didn't view upon my first looking at the works of Dylan Thomas is that in The Union of Night and Day, a lot of people saw the face of a frog. And, you know, once it was there, I could not unsee it, but it was not something that I necessarily saw. And the young learners were so keen and so brave to be able to share that and not feel censored by like, oh yeah, there's a right way to see this piece of art. And then, so that's on one side, and then a kind of literal end of imagery. And then, you know, some students might look at the same piece of art and go, I see in The Union of Night and Day, for example, the complexity of human morality. And also, because of the negative and positive, like the negative space being used, it makes me think about how in society we have very polarized strata, and this work shows us the importance of bringing them together. And so I, you know, when that happened, I was like, okay, why are, like, thank you for teaching us. Thank you so much. Yes.
Yeah, I felt like, wow, we're in such good hands. I'm learning so much. I felt so grateful.
Yeah, so I guess another resonant thing is that oftentimes, you know, when looking at demographic research or like news headlines, it's usually like, oh, the younger generation, they're doing this thing. It's not like how the other generation did the thing. Oh, we're doomed. After the workshops, I felt in pretty good hands.
Me too. Me too. You'll hear some of the voices of a grade 8 group on this podcast. And my gosh, I'm so excited to stay in touch with them and hear more about the good work they're doing in the world. I noticed that you, actually, this group that I was chatting with of grade 8 folks who participated in the workshops, they used the word welcome. We felt there was a welcoming presence. We felt welcome to share our ideas in the workshops. And I asked them a little bit more about what makes a welcoming environment. And I notice about you that you have this positive energy. And like I said, when we got to the school super early in the morning, you had this big smile on your face all the time. And you tend to, I feel welcomed in and invited to connect with you so easily when I'm around you. And where do you think that comes from, Alex?
Well, let's see. I think to a certain degree, my upbringing, my mom has always come with the perspective of wanting to emphasize the positives in any situation, which I have taken to, admittedly. That's, as with anyone, doesn't always happen. So a little bit of my upbringing, but also, you know, working in the arts sector, particularly at the conservatory, you see a lot of people on different places in their artistic journeys. And part of my job there is to make sure that people feel comfortable and safe to share where they're at and develop from there. So every morning at the school workshops, I'd kind of be like, yes, we're here. We're so pleased to be here, to be invited to this space, to engage with these young learners. And I wanted to make sure that I was bringing the proper enthusiasm, which reflected how enthusiastic I was about being able to work with them, and really making sure that that was clear, you know? So it was a mix of having the right level of caffeination and just really appreciating the privilege and the opportunity and the wonderful people that were at the workshops, and really just vibing off of that. Am I using that word correctly? Am I old? Oh no.
I think you sound very cool, Alex. I'm no coolness authority, but speaking of coolness, you have this connection to zoology. How do you think these workshops, what kind of connections can you make between zoology and these workshops, if any?
Well, I remember distinctly in my zoology degree, in third year, there was this professor by the name of Douglas Fudge. And he taught the third year invertebrate zoology course. And a big part of it concentrated on like applying the scientific method, which you'd think, oh, we did that in high school. Like we're good. Like we have it figured out. But there was something very liberating and great about how he described it, in that in like creating your hypotheses and your concept of the world, you have to use your imagination. And so he was always like, you know, this part's really exciting. When you create your hypothesis and your predictions, sure, they have to be testable. Sure, they have to be like very clear. But like it all comes from you imagining a whole entire world. That imaginative element, particularly as it applies to the wonderful fauna. And alas, I didn't study a huge amount of flora during my time in zoology, but also applies to flora. Just thinking about all the living things around us in that imaginative way, I think really applies to how we think about art in a really imaginative way, and allowing ourselves to create a world when we see a work of art, and imagining what that can mean. Also, another thing from my zoology degree that I would be remiss not to mention, I just remember going into that degree and then taking a second year invertebrate zoology course, just that went through the whole swath of different invertebrates. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, yeah. These guys are super cool. Like, what was I thinking about invertebrate zoology? Because I did not know you were here and y'all are amazing. And the instructor for that course, Shoshana Jacobs, I just remember the morning before our very first lecture, she sent out a very short email. At the end of her email, exclaimed like, I'm so excited to be able to do invertebrate zoology with you. And then in all caps, and then a whole bunch of exclamation marks just wrote, And I carry that with me because, like, you know, first year, you're like, I need to be very, very, you know, poised and professional in my communications with professors. And then, you know, second year pops by, this really amazing prof pops by and ends an email with, whee! And I was kind of like, you know what, I strive to have that level of enthusiasm in my interactions and with my field of study.
I love it. And I feel it from you. Thank you. I am going to take that to heart and remember that. Wonderful. Can we do this every day, Alex?
I would love to.
Okay, let's. We might need a 5-hour podcast, Alex. I'm also wondering, looking back to when you were in grades 4-ish to 12-ish, let's say grade 8-ish, that period of your life, why would you have wanted the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria to visit your school, assuming you would have wanted that?
Oh, I definitely would have wanted that. I would have loved the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria to come with their workshop series to my school, because growing up, I had a familiarity with what my parents did, what my family did, what was happening in school and my extracurriculars. But professional art making wasn't really part of that world. I would have loved to have the workshops so that I could see the artists in my community and really understand that that's an active thing that's happening. And whether I at the time would be like, oh, that's something I want to do when I grow up, or as something like, I just want to engage with that regularly because it's something exciting in my community. I would have loved to have that because, It enriches your sense of your place, the people around you, and how the world works in general. Also, I very much appreciate specifically how the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria, in their search for artists or their call for artists each year, they choose a different theme. They don't always go like, okay, we're going to have a painter and then another painter and then another painter. as we this year explored through sound, visual arts, as well as art in general, I think having the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria in my school growing up, I would have had a wider sense of what art meant, because having someone who's a professional coming in and being like, hey, I do art and it's not what you expect, would really broaden that. So that would enrich how I could look at the world, especially nowadays in a contemporary society where so many things are crossing over, so many interdisciplinary projects happen, whether you're in the arts or not. It's really, really interesting, rewarding, and important to be able to think about things in an interdisciplinary or outside of like the strict guidelines of previously defined areas, to be able to work outside of and across boundaries.
You are so generous, Alex. Your generosity of spirit has been such a gift to enjoy. And I've learned so much from you. I hope we keep connecting because really it's been such a joy. So thank you so much for sharing your ideas, thoughts, questions, musings with me. And thank you to the UVic and Indigenous education students and Dr. Carmen Rodriguez de France. We've been collaborating for years now, and I'm so grateful to call her a colleague and a friend. And John Harris, elders and Indigenous knowledge facilitator, who joined us to help us close the workshops in a good way. And all of these young learners and teachers and administrators all over this region who dove into this experience with us.
Including four grade eight learners who you are about to hear from right now.
Hi, my name is Zoe Gill, and I'm in the eighth grade, and we're from the Wasanich and Lekwungen-speaking territories.
My name is Sylvie Gordon, and I am also in eighth grade.
My name is Autumn Suddy, and I'm also in eighth grade.
My name is Sandy, and I am also in the eighth grade.
And I'm Joe Roosh. I'm their teacher, and I have graduated from the eighth grade.
Thanks, everybody. So I wonder if you could share anything that comes to mind. I know the workshop was a couple months ago now, but what stands out to you about your workshop experience when the art gallery visited your school?
I really enjoyed doing the movement Mandelas with Alex Chen.
Yeah, I also enjoyed that. I guess sort of turning a picture into movement and sound was very cool.
I think something that really stood out to me was how surprisingly interactive it was. Like, I was prepared for how we usually, like, workshops are kind of boring, but this workshop was so immersive that I really felt like I was learning something, especially in the moving mandalas, because you were doing something and you were moving while learning about art, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, we definitely learned to kind of look deeper than just what originally was and think about, like, the creative thought process behind how it was created.
Yes, agreed with my friends on that one. I definitely like the analysis portion behind it, because that's what I like to do, and I may have slightly monopolized the time on that one. But
I remember that you said something about duality when you were looking at one of the mandalas. I don't know if you remember that. Can you share that if you remember?
I did. I said lots of times in art, duality is explored through how the two pieces are separate and how they are different. But I thought that the mandala that I saw explored duality through a very underappreciated way, which is how they connect.
How they connect. What do you mean by they? Can you say more about
that? Two halves, because the mandala we saw was like black and white, and then it came together in the middle. Kind of like a yin yang thing. And it captured how those two halves were uniting rather than how they were dividing. And I think that also carries over into almost a message that we should see in real life, how we should focus less on our differences as a people and more on our similarities, because in the grand scheme of things, everyone's experiences are cosmically mundane.
Thank you. You might have touched on this a bit just now, but let's see what comes up. So we've been talking about how we looked at prints by the artist Dylan Thomas, his mandalas. He's Coast Salish from Lyaxan Nation. And we were joined by local opera singer Alex Chen. I wonder what kinds of things you learned about their art practices. And I wonder if this taught you anything about yourself.
I found with, like, analyzing the mandalas, you kind of had to look deeper than what you would just originally thought of, which can kind of reflect back on how you should look at yourself deeper than just what is originally, like, on the surface and things.
I also found, I think it's kind of unrelated, but I also felt really welcome when we were doing the workshop, especially because Alex Chen, he was just like singing and showing us what he did, and it was really cool, and I felt really like a part of something.
This may seem a little bit more surface level, but when I saw like the kind of talent that both Alex Chen and Dylan Thomas showed us, like between the artwork and like the way, like his, like Alex Chen's beautiful voice, I really felt that I could do something a little bit more. I love to sing and to do art, and it made me feel like a little, like I could do a little bit more. And I started singing more and I started doing art more. It made me really kind of find, motivated to find my talent. Yeah.
I really loved, I agree with Sambeat, definitely. But I also really loved that they gave us, like as just a group of random school kids, a chance to analyze art and have our opinions be valued. Yeah. And like, mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you know how in The Principle of Death of the Author is that the author's opinion on their creation or the artist's opinion on their creation does not outweigh or outvalue the consumer's opinion. And I really liked how that everyone was given a chance to share, and no one person's opinion was ever seen as more important than the others. And I really love that.
And I wonder if you, any of you feel like that idea might be connected to, you know, at the beginning of the workshop, we started by all sitting in circles. So we're all at the same level and we're facing hearts, as opposed to, you know, sitting in desks and the adult teacher person is the one standing in their highest in the room. So we started in circle at the beginning and at the end, for many reasons, but partly connected to Indigenous principles of learning. Do you feel like what you just said is connected to those kinds of things that we did in the workshop?
I didn't want to speak too much on Indigenous principles of learning because I don't know very much about them. But I do think that the sense of equality is a big part. It was a very welcoming environment. I do think that is a big part of Indigenous teachings.
And I guess we all kind of felt very connected into this workshop because we felt heard.
And like, even if you're not super close with some of the people you're doing, you have something in common. So you're able to just work together and kind of forget anything that would go on outside of the circle and just focus on what you're doing in that moment. It felt very like mindful almost.
I took my mandala in a bit of a different direction. I focused less on things I'm interested in it and more like experiences and emotions I had, because that's how I like to create art. And I definitely found that it was a very inclusive environment, welcoming environment for me to do that. And they didn't like come over and see me drawing what I was drawing and say, no, actually you have to do this. They didn't do that. They just said, as long as it represents you and who you are, then go hog wild.
I heard a few of you say that it was a welcoming experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It very much fills my heart, because all of the collaborators that have come together to think about how can this be a meaningful experience, these workshops have talked about, it's really important that it be welcoming. What makes for a welcoming experience, in your opinion?
Well, I felt really like included in that I could say what I thought and I wasn't going to be judged. And I felt very, I don't know, immersed into the experience.
I think for me, it was really just like the energy that was given yeah. off by you and the big students, Alex Chen and Dr. Rodriguez. It was just like, it was just that kind of feeling that like these people would be inclusive and these people would be accepting. And it was just so nice.
It was a really nice atmosphere with everyone being excited and eager to be there. And then you were also able to feel very seen and heard when we were in the circle, because if you were interested in, everyone got a chance to speak, but you weren't forced to if you weren't comfortable or didn't want to share. And it was very nice to have the options and everyone being included in that way.
It was amazing. And I really hope that we get the chance to do it again and other students get to experience it as well.
Yeah. I think that pretty much sums it up. Yeah, it was just like a very respectful, like speaking as if they are like someone who's on the same level as you, and also like someone who also has ideas and concepts of their own and they want to also be heard, as well as the educator. And I really felt that way, that I was heard.
I'm so glad you felt that way. Reciprocity feels really important in this kind of experience.
And this idea of reciprocity was one of the key points of reflection for some of the UVic Indigenous education students who came together at the end of the semester to share a little bit about their teaching experience. So we'll hear from a few of them now.
So for our group, we discussed really knowing our students and making sure that we have our students reflected in the learning process. Then we also discussed starting with the end in mind, so having our learners know what the expectation is, where we're going, and that will make the learning experience relevant. And then empowering our students by giving them the tools to be critical thinkers and giving them the tools to continue on their learning after we have left the classroom and take that learning out into the real world and apply it in whichever way they see fit.
In our group, we also taught at Arbutus Middle School and focused on the pandemic as well. And by reflecting on our lesson, we discussed the aspect and topic of vulnerability. And we began our lesson by discussing what was challenging during the pandemic for us. And we wanted to be able to show our students by being vulnerable ourselves that, you know, it's an open floor and that they're able to show their and share their experiences as well. And fostering choice and voice in the activity that we chose by being able to, for them to focus on something that they're interested in or something that really reflects themselves and their experiences. So we tried to foster that in our classroom and then ended with a sharing circle by, again, beginning with how we felt during the lesson and then allowing the students to share if they would like to and then pass also if they were not comfortable.
We've talked about a lot of the similar things that other groups have, but just really getting to know your students, their interests, what's meaningful to them, and then just being really purposeful in what you are doing as a teacher. So there's a reason and meaning behind kind of everything that you plan so that students can see themselves reflected and connect what they're learning in school to their own lives. And then we said that you would know if it's working basically by student engagement and how invested they are, if they're asking questions, if they're going home and telling their families about it, if they're showing interest during the lesson.
So we sort of in our conversation came up with four words that we felt spoke to creating meaningful teaching and learning experiences, and that began with relevance. So making sure that the learning opportunity is relevant to the learners by engaging it, you know, with their interests and what they want to learn about, and that you can only do that through relationships, which was our second sort of keyword, and cultivating those reciprocal relationships through connection, which was our third word, and getting to know who the students are and what they need to be successful in that space, as well as just always entering into a teaching or learning experience with purpose, authenticity, and intention, and doing the best that you can with what you know in that moment.
And now you'll hear John Harris, the Elders and Indigenous Knowledge Facilitator for School District 61 in Victoria, share some thoughts with everyone who delivered the workshops at our closing gathering about what a powerful opportunity it is to create meaningful learning environments for and with young learners as Indigenous and non-Indigenous educators in schools.
Many of you shared that you know, you've learned that you have a lot more to learn, and I understand that. I bring my lifetime of experiences, you know, growing up in Victoria, growing up in community, going to cultural community, being connected to the Indigenous community, but being a product of the education system and then being part of the education system. So all of those experiences go into my practice. So don't feel bad if you feel like you still have more to learn, or that you're just emerging as a learner in Indigenous education. I do see the value of Indigenous education for all students, but also for our Indigenous learners. It's about holding that space for them and creating opportunities for them to bring their knowledge and expertise and experiences to be valued in the classroom setting. Some of the other things I want to share is that one of my favorite First Peoples principles of learning is that learning takes patience and time. And we're not always afforded that time in the system that we're in. You know, sometimes we have to fit in a lesson plan that should take a week into a day, right? And so just to be mindful and to not let that deter you, right? Many of you guys talked about taking risks. I think that's so important. And so I'd love to see that there's more opportunities for this learning in all of our phases of education, starting from kindergarten all the way up to university. It's so important. I also wanted to just share a final song with you. This is a song that is a celebration song, and I just wanted to share it with you because, you know, we're celebrating the end of this program and the beginning of your journey into education. This song, the celebration song, was developed or composed by Bradley Dick Wellington from Songhees Nation. And it's one that belongs to our district that we have the permission to share and teach. So whenever I go and share a song or songs with a class of students or with staff, you know, the most important piece is learning the protocol is to say where the song came from and who gave you permission to sing that song. You just can't go around singing songs. And so this song, we have permission to share in our school district. You guys can feel free to, when we're in a drum circle like this, if you want to just kind of follow along, you can, you know, drum with your hand, on the back of your hand like that. The first part of the song is a little bit harder to do that because it's a fast beat, but the second part for sure.
This is Work in Progress. This series is programmed through the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria in Victoria, BC, Lekwungen Lands, and is generously supported by a Canada Council for the Arts Digital Now grant. For those who want to learn more about these workshops, visit aggv.ca.
Alex, do you feel like singing us out?
Perhaps. Let's see. Let's do some more Mozart, but this time in German and about birds, because that's appropriate. What's the key? Is it G major?
Der Vogelfänger bin ich ja, stets lustig, heißa, hopsassa, ich Vogelfänger bin bekannt, bei alt und jung im ganzen Land. Weiß mit dem Lochen umzugehen und mich aufs Pfeifen zu verstehen.